And that's a wonderful, smooth opening to the show, isn't it? So anyway, we're having a real fun time here. And this is Ed August's World, the presumptuous title for a show by a fairly big, presumptuous guy. But I hope you love me. And this is the show where I don't talk about astrology or tarot or any of the mystic arts and stuff like that. What? Yeah, I don't know. So, you know, I was poking around. I have a pile of books here to go through. In the last three shows, I've talked about, I guess, the origin of my book collecting, my competitiveness with my brother, my first forays into bookshops in places like Berkeley and San Jose and San Francisco. And, you know, this is something I've really been doing for most of my life because I've always had this addiction. One could really call it an addiction, you know, to, and I've never been really partial to going into places like, oh, you know, Barnes & Noble and looking at the brand new books that have come out. There's just, that's never been my thing, you know. And also, do I want to go into Barnes & Noble, pay $20, you know, for a brand new book? I don't know. I like to poke around and look at the used and rare. You know, in my early days, it was Twice Read Books on San Fernando Street, a couple blocks away from San Jose State College. And then a little bit farther over to South First to look in State Books. And I think in my last show, I described some of the treasures that I would find and bring home. Oh, by the way, Twice Read, which is long gone, I'm sure is long gone. They had a quirky bookseller in there. And you know, if you go to enough bookstores, you're going to see some pretty quirky guys. So what he had was a huge assortment of books that were kind of dusty. They'd been there for a while. I think he must have bought everything, inventory, you know, from some other person. Then he sat there reading a book until somebody came up and then he would write up the sales. Now, this story goes back to about 1970, I guess. So I was in Twice Read, and I found, you know, like a book of poems by Whittier, I think it was, with a beautiful cover, you know, the kind with like a scene, a rustic scene, with gilt lettering and beautiful designs on it, and the poems were nice. I'm not, maybe then I was more of a reader of poems. I would not call myself that now. I don't sit around and read poetry. But so I took it up to the counter, along with a couple other books. I got a couple other, I think I had some sci-fis. So, you know, without saying anything, he takes it and he takes his pencil and he adjusts the price. He said, this isn't 95 cents. That's the wrong price. It's $4.50 or something. I said, what do you mean it's the wrong price? He stares at me. He says, well, it's the wrong price. I tell you, the right price for this book is $4.50. You know, I should have bought it because now it would probably be worth $15, right? But anyway, so I was a little miffed. I think I did buy one science fiction book that he only marked up from 75 cents to $1.50, you know. But I didn't go back there. I didn't go back. And then years later, I was talking to my friend Joe, who's a copywriter in was a copywriter in Los Angeles, also a playwright, and he graduated with me in Santa Clara High School. I think he was 1 year behind me. And anyway, he said, Ed, did you ever go down to Twice Read Books? Wow, was that guy a jerk or what? And I said, oh, really? he had the same experience. So there's unusual things going on with book dealers sometimes. They're generally wonderful people. There is one in the Santa Cruz area that I wandered into a store. This is, again, so many years ago that I don't think I could possibly hurt anybody's feelings. I'm just saying it's generally in the Santa Cruz, California area. And at one point he said, we're going to be, you know, closing for an hour. And then, you know, my substitute is coming in, or the other owner is coming in or something like that. So I put it around, came back in about an hour, and the store was open. And sure enough, there was somebody sitting behind the desk, but I swear it was the same guy. But he had dressed up as a woman. He had this big blonde wig on, and you know the disguise, you know, worked pretty well. Except he had a problem with the mustache. You know, he had a very thin little mustache, and he was made up as a woman, and he had a woman's dress on and everything. That was fascinating. You know, you don't see that every day. You just don't see that every day, even in California. So, yeah, he was, I guess, affecting the, position of there being two owners, two people running the store. One ran it in the mornings, another one ran it in the afternoons. He closed early, and this was the second person. So I said, I have a box of books in the car, that I wanted to show you, because I was schlepping books in those days. I had so many books that I was actually making money by taking these to book dealers. So I said, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't possibly look at those books. George will have to do it in the morning, And I just realized, oh, yeah, that's right, because of course this is a different person. It's not a guy who wants to dig through a box of books. It's a lady. So that's another story I have about booksellers. Yeah, they're a fascinating breed. And I'm looking right now at something by Ken Lopez, bookseller, who is in a town in Massachusetts. Did I get the town in Massachusetts? Hadley, Massachusetts, which I presume is somewhere near Boston. Ken Lopez, bookseller. I think he's still there. And he wrote a piece called Trends in Modern Book Collecting. And the gist of it was, the prices have gone astronomical in the last 10 or 15 years on used books. And he wanted to explain the extraordinary rise in the prices of a small handful of important, or at least highly sought after, modern titles, such as Catcher in the Rye, To Kill a Mockingbird, and On the Road, to name just a few. The prices for collectible copies of these books have skyrocketed in recent years, reaching unthinkable new levels and then leaving those levels in the dust months later. How high could they go? What do I say when a customer asks if these or others like them are good investments at this price level? What was fueling the prices? Could the bottom drop out of this market and their prices plummet as fast as they'd risen? Well, I thought this is a fascinating article. It turned out to be 7,000 words long, and it's readily visible on the internet. Just look Ken Lopez article. No, Ken Lopez bookseller article, and I'm sure it'll come up. Or you can just do the title, which is Trends in Modern Book Collecting, 7,000 words. So I got to the bottom of this article, pages and pages later, and it was copyrighted 1999. So holy smokes, this is what the book market was like, like 17 or 18 years ago. And it sounded to me like it could have been yesterday. I guess 1999 was yesterday. So I looked further, and there was also an update. He updated this, and if you go to www.rarebookhub, there is Ken Lopez updates his views on modern book collecting trends. Now, I believe that what happened is books were going up and up along with a lot of other stuff like real estate and art, And then we hit around about, late 2007, 2008, definitely. I remember I was on eBay quite a bit with books in 2007, and I had staked quite a bit on eBay. And I, did the fancy ads where you would put like frames around the books and, different colors to the pages and themes and icons and everything. So anyway, in the summer of two, everything was going great. In the summer of 2007, it's like people stopped buying from me on eBay, and I thought, what the heck? My friend here says that eBay consciously drove people off of the market by doing what? By like putting your stuff in places where nobody could find it. If you were a major corporation, you would pop right up, But the little guy's stuff was hidden. So, that might have been it. That really might have been it. And I was actually forced out because I had like auctions after auctions after auctions that just did not reach a minimum. And I wasn't going to sell books, for any price. I mean, I wasn't going to sell them for 50 cents. I wasn't going to lose money in shipping. just for quantity of sales or something, or to make people happy. No, I was in the business of, it was a commercial business for me. So eBay started going downhill for me. 2007, by August of 2007, I was out. Now 2008 comes along. Wow. I started having some other problems, but of course there was the crash, what turned into the Great Recession, but that took until late in 2008 for that to happen. I think it did affect the election because the Democrat won, and the banks and the loans got hard to get. The banks priced I think the banks actually helped cause the Great Recession because of their restrictive lending policies. And, they just tightened up credit. You remember how people were complaining for a long time that even somebody who had AAA credit, who had a score of 800, was not able to get a loan. And that seems to be kind of like a practice of the banking system. And I hate to get political on here. I never get political. You will never hear me say a political word on any of my shows. That's just not me. Is it? Is it me? She's laughing. And now that's the political one over there. We got to watch out for her. Some people in the audience want to put cotton in their ears when she comes on. Oh, well, it's true. They could just tune out. She doesn't care. No. She's here to speak, not to be necessarily listened to. But anyway, but to return to my point, bankers and the bank consortium and the system of banking itself and the Federal Reserve Bank. I mean, the United States does not own the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve owns the United States, and they can make a market tighter, and they can squeeze people into bankruptcy through their lending practices. If you want to find out more about the Fed, I hit upon this guy named Bill Still, Still, and he has something called Money Masters. The Money Masters, right? The Money Masters. It's the sixth most watched documentary on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube, just bring a large container of popcorn with you, because it'll take about 3 hours and 22 minutes for him to tell you the history of Western, finance, starting from the tallywhackers of the 16th century up through the creation of the Bank of England, Andrew Jackson's fight against the National Bank, and finally J.P. Morgan, the Rothschilds, and the institution of, and I don't know how it happened, the institution of the Federal Reserve, roundabouts in 1913, just about the same time we got the federal income tax shoved down our throats. So it's a wild and crazy story. It includes the Great Depression, and it doesn't get to the Great Recession because this thing was filmed in 1996. But and you can still see Bill Still on the air practically every day with a new video on YouTube. How the heck did I get it? Oh, the subject was, here's what I think happened, is when the Great Recession came along by 2008, 2009, book dealers were going to their big book fairs, like in Boston and Manhattan and San Francisco and Los Angeles. Not too much happening in the middle states or the southern states. This is mostly on the coasts. Where most of these people gather, not to mention London and Frankfurt and Paris. Anyway, there weren't that many shoppers. There just weren't people were browsing, coming through, but there wasn't that much shopping. So by about 2009, and definitely by 2010, prices on some of these rare collectible books by these famous authors, these one-of-a-kind rarities, had started to, I won't say they took a plunge. It was kind of like the same thing that happened with art at Christie's and Sotheby's at the same approximate time. The prices were weak. Prices were weak for, 3 or 4 years. So now, as we get into 2016, 2017, prices are coming back. The book market seems to be sturdy. And, of course, here's what I think, is that there are always collectors. there are people who are crazy to collect, just crazy to collect books, you know. And they're looking for those favorite authors. They're looking for those titles. They want to complete a collection. My goodness, I have a fellow in England who lives about 20 miles west of Buckingham Palace there in the suburbs of London, who wanted to get every edition he could of a book about the travels up the Amazon by, I can't remember the author right now, but it was Travels Up the Amazon, I believe, by a naturalist that he was very fond of, 1870s, maybe, was it? Yeah, 1870-something. So anyway, he had to have my edition, and it was $350, which was a great book for me. I don't usually ever sell a book for that much money. Well, actually, yes, I do, but they're few and far between. They're glorious moments when you can sell a book for $350. To get it to London, though, we had to do overseas shipping. If I sent the book in a cheap way, there was no way to insure it. So if he claimed that he didn't arrive, or if it just didn't arrive, there was no way that I could prove that I could actually that I had actually sent him the book. So so basically it just required one of these, you know, practically like a 3-day shipping or something. So he paid more than $100. I think actually it was something like $145 to get that book shipped. And that's one of the terrors of the book market, is international sales. You know, international sales can be just miserable because of how expensive it is, and which is a shame, because it's almost like we're not really connected with the with Europe right now. And the European book market is every bit as big as the market in the United States, maybe bigger. So let me see here. You know, I have a couple of callers. This is fabulous. I have one person calling from, I'm not sure what the area code is. I see the area code, but I don't recognize it. Let me try that. That's the first person that called. They've been waiting for quite a while. Hello, area code 516. Hello.
Hi, how's it going? Great show so far.
Oh, thanks very much. Thank you very much. What can I do for you? What can I do for you today? And may I ask, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Long Island.
Okay. And, sir, what can I do for you? Did you want to talk about books or something else? What's going on?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. My name's Dave Davidson, and I'd love to have you as a guest on my show one of these days.
Oh, what kind of show do you do, Dave? What kind of show is it that you have out there in Long Island? He's a troll and a person who deserves to be institutionalized, but I can say all these things because I cut him off completely, so he's going to have to dial back in if he wants to be on the show. That's so bizarre. We suddenly went from a PG-rated show, or maybe even a G-rated show, to when we edit this, is there any way of going into the middle of a show and removing objectionable matter? Okay, so folks, if you happen to hear that, we will remove. We will family save the podcast by removing objectionable stuff from trolls and stalkers like that guy, because he also calls my other show sometimes. So let us cross our fingers and hope that the next call is a more positive call. We're getting a call here from the 520 area code. Hello, 520.
Hello, Ed.
Hi. Is this
our friend?
This is our friend Steve. How's Suzanne doing? She's lurking around here. She's puttering around, and she's within probably 10 feet. Now, we've arranged the desks here almost back to back. So she's on one big computer, and I'm on another, which crashed.
I don't think I can be anything like as the last caller.
The last caller has a lot of nerve, and we should get the FCC after him or somebody like that for talking like that.
I don't know.
But anyway.
He's honest.
Really, was there anything really objectionable about biology, about basic biology, human biology of male, you know, that might appeal to the male gender, I guess? I don't know.
I don't know.
But
I don't think we're
going to
get too far distracted. But anyway, your show is on books.
It's on books. Well, it's at August's World. And what I wanted to do was have a chance to talk about more than, you know, the metaphysical side of things, which I do on my at August's psychic vampire show. What is it called? Psychic at August's psychic astrologer. Yeah, but I've been, you know, I like psychic vampires. You know? Well, they don't suck blood. They suck energy. Yeah, they suck soul energy.
How many of those have you known personally, Ed?
Oh, my goodness. I'm still, I knew one in college who, well, it's a long story. And then I knew one about a couple years ago, but she may be listening to the show, so I don't want to talk about her. But the one in college was a very strange guy. I vaguely remember him saying he knew that I was going to go up to Reno, Nevada for some reason. And he asked me, what is your rarest coin in your coin collection? I told him, oh, that's my uncirculated 1926 S. Buffalo nickel. He says, could you please
You don't
bring
have a
that
1909 S. EB?
Oh, I've seen them. And you know, going back to when I was about 10 years old, when these things were not all that, was not as expensive. Come to think of it, there was a guy in about fourth grade who hit on the idea of taking 1944 Lincoln pennies, and he would use some tool, chiseling tool or whatever, and he would knock off the front of the four and make it look like a one. So he was able to make 1914D and 1914S pennies out of a 1944 penny. And he said, ha, I got that guy over there, some guy, Donald or whatever his name is, and he paid him $5 for one, you know. And he had, and that's back when $5 was a lot of money. But anyway,
yeah, I remember when $5 would buy me mangoes and lighter fluid and haircuts and bus fare.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even
well,
on
are you serious?
I know you spent.
Talk about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Am
you
I
want to talk about? Maybe I'd like to ask you. I do want to ask you. Are you actively involved in selling books these days?
Yes. Right now, I have Ed August's Books, which is actually a website, and I'm regrouping, reconstituting, rebuilding the website. It had at one time more than
But I'm asking
between
without all that. I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
Are you actually selling some books these days?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
I look
Can we
to
talk
it.
About ones? For instance, I just sent Suzanne an email she may not have seen yet. I sent you an email also saying, hey, I'm here. But it occurred to me since somebody was looking for adventure books in South America that, hey, I have, I think it's an original copy of Kon-Tiki.
Oh, okay. From about 1959 or whatever Kon-Tiki came out. Yeah.
And I'm holding a book called Letters of Byron. And I open it up and I find a clipping from my mother. In her handwriting, it says Los Angeles Times, July 1976. And it's got a picture of Lord Byron and it says Bon Mot from Early Superstar. And it's, you know, just newspaper clipping. And she has it in a book called Selected Letters of Byron, edited by the Collins, Oxford University, Clarendon Press, 1928. I don't know how much that goes for.
Now, this is obviously a hardcover.
Yep.
Is it well bound? Is it got, you know, like a hardcover binding? And is there a dust jacket with it? Some books,
none of the books I'm going to run through here have dust jackets. But maybe you could jot down before saying much more what you guess the value might be. Just offhand.
Oh, okay.
I have a copy of Jane Eyre.
I can, you know, this is going to be an interesting practice here because what I am going to do is let me go to a site where I can probably find that. By the way, it's difficult to find prices of rare books through looking in books because any given book, and there was a series 20 or 30 years ago of book prices. Yeah, and they only have – they might have 1,000 titles. They might have 5,000 titles, but that would be, you know, a centillionth of the book.
Well, let me do this
there,
then.
So
instead of asking you to give me answers right now, you with me here? Instead of asking
yes,
you to
I'm
give
here.
Me answers right now, let me ask you to take down what it is I'm telling you. I'm going to just go through 10 books. I've gotten the first one already. Okay?
Well, now, wait
and
a second. You know, I'm on a page right now where I can look up this book and tell you exactly what it's worth. So do you want me to look up the book that you just mentioned, or is there a book that you really – because I could probably only do this
position.
To one or two books right now.
I'm not in
which one should we look up?
Maybe I should just
would you
tell
rather
you.
That I, would, you rather that I just, would you rather that I just take a list, make a list right now, write down the books that you have? Would that work better for you?
Yeah.
And then get back to you?
We won't
waste
everybody's time by having to listen to us through the agony for each one. Okay?
that's right. That's right. It would take forever. So let me get to a form here that I can write something down. Okay, and you can write down some of these too, Suzanne.
Things as, oh, that sounds like a real find. It's it's probably worth, you know, whatever, if you want to say anything like that. But let's keep running, okay?
Okay, so give me some authors and titles.
Okay, I have Charlotte Bronte, copy of Jane Eyre.
Okay, Bronte, yes. Bronte.
Copyright. That's interesting. On the front page, it says 1929 New York Book League of America. On the inside, it's a copyright 1926 Macmillan. That's interesting.
Well,
I never saw those.
Macmillan came out. Let me tell you, Macmillan published the book in 1926. In 1929, it was brought out by the Book League. And the Book League was kind of like a reader's, like a condensed book club of its day. That doesn't mean that they're not valuable, but probably having the 1926 version would be better. But let me just jot down Book League. And what condition would you say it's in?
Oh, none of these is in hot condition. They haven't been kept in vacuums and out of light and so forth.
Okay.
Just, oh,
yeah. Well, what I mean is, is the spine coming off, or is there notable damage, or is it just average red?
I would say average.
With a little scuffing. Okay. Charlotte Bronte, Jane Eyre, 1929/1926, Book League. And what else?
Okay, now I'm looking at one. I open it up. I see my father's signature and some notes in the front. And it looks as though it sold for $2.50. And it's called The Cambridge Poets, Students Edition,
the
Milton,
Bridge.
Edited.
Did you just say The Bridge Poet?
Cambridge.
No. Cambridge.
The Cambridge Poet.
The Cambridge Student Poet, okay.
Poets.
That's
this one is Milton, edited by William Vaughan Moody.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a did you say it's about Milton? It's about John Milton?
Yeah, it's his stuff. On the outside it says Milton Complete Poems.
And the author was Moody?
Yeah, he was, you know, the editor or whatever.
Moody, and, M-O-O-D-Y, okay. Moody editor.
And this is copyright 1899 by Houghton Mifflin and 1924 by Mifflin.
The sound hiccuped a little bit. I got 18, what was it, please?
1899.
The year? 1899, okay. By Houghton Mifflin.
Four, both copyrights by Houghton Mifflin.
Yes. A big book company out of Boston. Big publisher, yeah. Very big then.
Next one.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The Talisman by Sir Walter Scott.
Oh, okay. That goes back a few hundred years. Yeah.
Thomas Nelson and Sons, London and Edinburgh, Paris, Melbourne, Toronto, and New York. And if I can read, it's hard to find a year. That's strange.
Well, is it a small book, smallish book, paperback, hardcover?
Positive. Small, hardbound.
Small, okay. And the company?
Four by
just. Yeah, Thomas Nelson. I got it. Yes, exactly. Thomas Nelson, Sir Walter Scott, The Talisman. Okay,
right.
You can go on.
And Next book?
Yes.
Yeah, there's no date in there. I never saw that before either. Here's one
it
that might
be a reprint.
Say what?
Well, it could be a reprint edition, and it's certainly not a first edition because
no.
The Talisman must have come out in 1800, 1820, something like that. So
right.
So there's no point in having a date probably.
Okay. So now I'm picking up and looking at, starts off with a picture of him.
Uh-huh.
From a painting by Peter Taylor in 1786. Picture of Robert Burns. The complete poetical works of Robert Burns,
yes,
with a biographical sketch by Nathan Haskell Dole. New York, Thomas T. Crowell Company Publishers.
Crowell, uh-huh.
Right, 1900. Crowell, okay, whatever.
Yeah, complete poetical works, uh-huh.
1900, with a leather bound.
That's good. Could have been,
or a simulated
leather bound.
Leather bound
or calf or something. Leather,
whatever
nice.
Whatever you call
it. It looks like a nice book.
It's maroon with gold on it, you know?
Yeah. Maroon with gilt. Gilt titles and lettering on the spine and stuff like that. Okay. 1900, that's important. That's good. Sounds like a nice edition.
George Eliot's works. Poem, Spanish Gypsy. Says on the
Eliot's
cover, hard copy.
Does Eliot, you'll have to remind me, is it two L's or one L?
One L.
One L, okay. And one T or two T? Okay, we'll figure it out. George Eliot's works.
See what's happening here. Okay. Impressions
who published that one? Yeah.
I can't talk and hear you too.
Well, I was just wondering, who published George Eliot's works?
Well, I'll get there.
Okay.
Right now I'm trying to read Impressions of Theophrastus Such. Theophrastus. Essays and Poems by George Eliot. Author Adam.
Probably Theophrastus. Impressions of.
You got it. Such. S-U-S.
Probably some ancient Greek.
S-U-C-H. And it's got a whole bunch of other stuff by George Eliot. And then it says A.L. Burt, B-U-R-T, publisher. Duane Street, D-U-S Street, New York. And.
Okay.
Again. No copyright
date. Well, A.L. Burt was one of the other big reprint houses. So they would take a famous author, and they would take all his books, and they would reprint them. And usually this was done for A.L. Burt. This was done from about 1900 to maybe 1930, something like that. They were active for about 30 years. Another one that's even bigger is Grosset and Dunlap. You probably have some books that were published by Grosset and Dunlap in New York, and those are reprints also. Although every once in a while there's one that's rare.
You ready?
Yes, sir.
I'm holding one that's a hard copy, and it's a fairly large book called Rasputin, the Holy Devil.
Okay. That's interesting.
And shows him at the beginning with a picture of him by Rene, R-E-N-E, with an accent on the last, accent aigu, the last, Philip Miller, F-U-umlaut, L-O-umlaut, P-Miller.
Well,
translated from the German.
Let's just go to Miller, I guess. I'm just gonna look it up using the word Miller. Translated by so-and-so. Okay.
New York Viking Press, 1929, but copyright on the opposite page. 1927 by Grethlein and Company, Leipzig. And also 1928 by Viking Press with a whole bunch of others.
Okay, so it was translated from the German. It was first published in Germany in 1927. And it finally got – and Viking probably is the first American edition. In 1929.
Published in October 1929.
That could be a good book. That sounds like a good book. Yep.
Second is 1928. Third printing, 1928, December. Fourth printing, December 1928. Fifth printing, January 1929.
Oh, okay, so it's the fifth printing. Okay, so that's we stop at the last one. The most recent printing is the one that's the most important there.
It could have been three more in 1929, for all I know.
Yeah, you're right. And not only that, it could have been reprinted in 1930 and 1931. You know, it's a catchy title, you know. It's a catchy title. Rasputin, the Holy Devil. You know, that'll sell.
All right, here's one on the Hindenburg.
Okay.
By Michael McDonald, one word, no capital D, M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D, Mooney.
Mooney, M-O-O-N-E-Y?
Yep. By Dodd, Mead & Company in New York.
Dodd,
Copyright
Mead,
1972.
Okay.
That's interesting.
That's good. But did you, when you first mentioned the book, you said On the Hindenburg. Is that the actual title?
No, The Hindenburg is the title.
Oh, okay. The Hindenburg.
Okay, here comes one that might be ready. You ready?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Wow. This has my grandfather's, I never met him, grandfather's
signature?
Signature.
Book plate. Is it a book plate?
No, it has his signature on the inside of the cover, on the first page, inside cover.
Oh, wow.
With much esteem. Oh, I guess it's wow. I guess it's an autograph.
That could be an autograph. Are you sure that isn't an autograph by the author when it says with much esteem?
I think it is.
Or maybe it's a gift copy. Oh, okay. Take a look at the author's name and see if it matches, if you can make it out. A lot of times when they sign it like that, it's very hard to tell if it's an...
Yeah, it looks as though it is. I don't know. It looks as though it adds, well, it ends in Hop, but I can't see what it says before that. Ann Arbor, Michigan, signature 10 December 1936. You ready?
Okay.
The title is
Yes,
Perry.
Please.
The title
Wait,
is
I got to readjust my... Perry?
With a Paul.
The title is
the
Perry?
Book. Perry. The Explorer?
Oh, Perry, P-E-R-R-Y, Perry the Explorer.
P-E-A-R-Y.
Perry is the title?
That's
yeah.
it.
North Pole, South Pole, Perry.
By William Herbert Hobbs, H-O-B-B-S. New York,
oh, great.
Macmillan, 1936. Heavy-duty book. Copyright.
When you say heavy-duty, you mean it's thick?
Well, it's, you know, I'll tell you. Many pages.
Interesting. Perry by William Hobbs, New York, Macmillan, 1936.
I keep trying to tell you. 502 pages. Oh, there's a news clipping
pages.
In.
Nice, nice.
Wall Street Journal dated.
Uh-huh.
Find it. 16 April 1981 about it with some yellow highlights on the article. And
yellow
highlights?
Okay.
On the newspaper article?
Oh, in the newspaper
article.
Okay. Just so it's not in the book itself.
Well, I don't know.
Interesting.
What's in the book. It has a lot of photographs and plates like that.
Uh-huh. That's great. You'd think in a 500-page book, yeah, there should be photos and plates. And maps, probably. You know what? I bet there's maps in there, folding maps, because of its...
Could be.
You know,
I've never had time to sit down and read.
Well, can I just give you a suggestion? Can I give you one suggestion? You've mentioned three books so far that have signatures in there that sound quite interesting, and maybe they might include your grandfather, your mother, your father. I would take my little camera, my Android or whatever kind of camera you have, and take pictures of them. So even if you sell the book, you can still have the photos of the signatures and that matter in an album. And you might even want to take out the newspaper clipping if it's not attached, if it's not pasted down or something, you know.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing along with the book.
I agree with you.
Okay, so anyway, one last book here.
Okay.
There may be others. I have I have 10 that I've mentioned aside from Kon-Tiki, which I didn't bring along here. But you ready? This
Let
is
me
a
just
book
jot
by
down
Dr. Frederick with an R-I-C-K A Cook, C-O-O-K. My Attainment of the Pole.
I missed the title. Could you give me that again?
My Attainment of the Pole.
Oh, My Attainment of the, I'm going to guess that you said goal, not pole. Okay, My Attainment of the Goal. Wow, is that a
pole?
Book or is that a... Oh, pole, P-O-L-E?
Yep.
Okay.
As in
North. Better. Okay, that's. Yeah.
Being the record of the expedition that first reached the boreal center. 1907, with the final summary of the pole controversy.
Oh, that's interesting. So it adds some science to it. Okay.
Damn, I can't talk while you're talking.
No. Just ignore me. Yeah.
Trying to, Ed.
Now, come on. Be nice to the radio host.
Show, you know.
Be nice to the radio host. I insist that you be nice to the radio host. 1907. You didn't tell me what the publisher was. What's the publisher on that one?
Trying to get there, Ed. Okay, this is by Dr. Frederick A. Cook, publisher.
You said that already.
Polar...
Yes.
Damn.
My Attainment of the Pole.
Be quiet and listen. I'm trying to tell you the publisher. The Polar Publishing Company.
Oh, okay.
Jeez. I don't need feedback on everything I say. Ready? The Polar Publishing Company, Marbridge Building, Marbridge Building, 1911. Mm-hmm. It's also a fat book.
I would swear that you just said 1907. After you said... Boreal Center, you said 1907.
1911.
Oh, okay. I heard you wrong. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Dr. Frederick A. Cook, My Attainment of the Pole, the something or other expedition to reach the Boreal Center, Polar Publishing Company, 1911. You know, that between that one and the autograph company, the autograph copy of the Perry book, those sound like the best books. You have definitely saved the best books for the last. That's
you
it?
Might
is
be
that,
interested.
Is that the last? Yep.
It is. You might be interested in the something at the beginning, just after the copyright page.
Yes.
To the Pathfinders, to the Indian who invented pemmican and snowshoes, to the Eskimo who gave the art of sled traveling, to this twin family of wild folk who have no flag goes the first credit. To the forgotten trail makers whose book of experience has been a guide. To the fallen victors whose bleached bones mark steps in the ascent of the ladder of latitudes. To these, the pathfinders, past, present, and future, I inscribe the first page. In the ultimate success, there is glory enough to go to the graves of the dead, and to the heads of the living.
Awesome. Awesome. And is that printed on the page, or is it sometimes people actually write that kind of stuff down, like a little, you know.
It's print.
In handwriting.
No, print.
Printed, okay. All right. Is that book signed anywhere, or does that have any
I don't
any
think
other
so, and I just put it on the bottom, and I'm piling them up by size for a change, so give me a moment and I'll answer that, or at least I'll try to.
Okay.
All right.
So this is wonderful. And you gave me more than 10 books. You gave me about 12 books, so that's great.
Can't count anymore.
Yeah. Occupational
6,798 fragments. I can't count a thing.
Well, you see, you're probably a mathematician, and that's an occupational hazard with being a mathematician. Eventually, they can't count anymore. But it's sad. It's really sad. It's like being an astronomer and not being able to see a star at night, you know.
I'm told that Einstein couldn't count when he played violin.
Why would he have to? That's cool.
Well, when you're in three, four time, you count 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, or 6, 8 time, you count 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. So yeah.
Uh huh. That's cool.
No, I find no inscriptions or handwritings yet to be seen in this book by Cook.
Well, here's what I'm going to suggest. I have to pretty much keep talking, and I won't have time to look up anything right at the moment.
Of course.
But I will have my next edition of this show will be on when? Tuesday of next week. So what I'll do is I'll look these books up.
I can't promise to come back for an answer. Maybe you could email me something.
Okay. But for the interest of anyone who's listening, and maybe they were curious about some of these titles, because some of them are very
curious. Has anybody called in?
Yes, I have two other people. There's three other people that are holding, although one of them is Suzanne.
Has an interest in hearing more about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. So thank you.
I'm going to be a week, much less a day or an hour.
We can't promise anything about a week from now. Who knows what's going to happen between now and a week? But I will definitely, if the show is here, I will definitely mention the best of these books, you know, on the air, just to kind of say, hey, and if you were listening last Thursday,
good.
Here are the books
I
that
have
we
no
spoke
objective.
Of, and that'll be fun. Well, thank you.
Just so you don't give out
my
address.
But I'll also email you. I will also email you. You're so welcome. And do you want to keep listening or should I let you go?
I'll listen for a while and see if this has sparked any interest or whatever, maybe some feedback. I do have other things I need to do. But
thank you so much for the idea. I had not even thought of the possibility that people would call and they'd have books that they want me to look at. I'd be glad to do that. That's a great idea. And by the way, there's probably a 50-50 chance that the people that are holding, at least one of them is going to be that same guy again. So I'm answering calls with great trepidation here and my finger on the trigger. Well, who's jealous? Oh, the troll is just jealous. I believe he does have a radio show somewhere because when he emailed me and Suzanne looked up his, what's that called? Not his domain, his IP address. From the complete header, he had something to do with Sirius Radio. He was calling from or writing from Sirius or Sirius XM Radio. So he may be a competitor, he may be a stooge, he may be an idiot. But anyway,
he might.
So there's always.
He might be.
I'm not going to give any more airtime.
Phrenologist.
Phrenologist. I don't know. I'd rather talk to a phrenologist than.
Well, he could be
like
LGTB, whatever, you know.
Maybe it's arranged. Should say that. Now listen here. I have no problems with people of various, persuasions, right? I mean, or maybe it's genetic. Who knows? A woman trapped in a man's body. Okay, that's not a problem. But as I was telling in my little anecdote about the bookshop owner in the Santa Cruz area. But this guy, when he calls in, and he can call in on numerous different phone lines. Sometimes says,
oh, hello there. This is Amy, and I'm calling from Long Island.
And anyway, but it's better voice than that. See, I can't do it, but he can do it and make it sound like it's somebody named Amy. So we'll have to find out. I'm just going to cross my fingers that
I don't want to be in your seat.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll run a commercial and screen them, or Suzanne can. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Steve. We'll be talking to you soon. I'll email you
good.
Some results on these authors and titles.
That's fine.
Thank
go
you,
ahead
sir.
And tune in. I'll listen for a while.
Okay. And you know what? We've been on. Somehow we've been on for almost, 51 minutes? That's amazing. So we're due to have a session of commercials. And while that's happening, I'm going to browse through the callers and see what's going on. You want to play some commercials from over there? She's pretty good at that.
Yeah. Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer Radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Oh, yeah, I see. That's it.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time, to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal Radio Show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
Okay, but you don't.
Tune in to the Mad Scientist Expo Show every Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, where we discuss the science in the news today, take a closer look, and expose where fraud is being committed for various agendas, from money to politics to downright pure evil and malice. Of course we trust science. It's scientists we don't trust. Tune in and join the conversation on Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, on Freedomizer Radio.
And we're back again. So Freedomizer Radio has given us this opportunity. I actually spun off from Suzanne, who follows this show, with her Mad Scientist Exposed, based on her madscientist.exposed website, where she tackles, well, you know, we believe in science. It's just science. We trust in science, but it's just scientists we don't always trust, because some of them are in it for the money. Some of them, you know, are bad people. But I won't go there. Hey, I want to thank Steve again for calling up with about 12 books to look at. And without looking them, even without looking them up, I would say that the best ones were the last few. Dr. Frederick Cook's My Attainment of the Pole. He proved something about the North Pole, his travels to the Boreal Center. And Polar Publishing Company. How could a book published by the Polar Publishing Company not be valuable? It was dated 1911, and I liked a little ditty about the Pathfinders that's on there too. So, by the way, that's one way of telling whether your book is of some value. I mean, no, not just your book. Let's say you're in a little antique store, or you're at a flea market, or you're at a yard sale, and there's shelves and shelves of books in front of you. And, you know, so the thing to do is don't grab the A.L. Burt publisher books. Don't grab the Grosset and Dunlap published books. You know, that would be sort of like the Reader's Digest of book publishing, those two, because they mostly do reprints. But get something that's like a real obscure publishing company. Get a publishing company that sounds like you've never heard of them before. And what, were they crazy to name themselves a publishing company by that name? Yes, that's probably going to be the valuable book. So now Viking Press has been around for ages, and this is a fifth printing. That's of Rasputin, the Holy Devil. But I think that book could still have some value, because that's a subject that people just seem to gravitate on, something impressively, you know, evil. Rasputin was a strange character. If you've ever seen the photograph of Rasputin where he stares, you know, he looks like he could hypnotize a person with one stare. And also the Hindenburg book, you know what? The Hindenburg might be a good book, because that's 3 or 4 years before the Hindenburg exploded and burnt in a pile of flames, you know, in New Jersey. So, you know, that's maybe more about the construction of the book, et cetera, et cetera. Not to be confused with General Hindenburg of the German army. And, of course, an autographed copy about Perry. That could be good, too. So some of these books, well, when I say good, okay, none of the books is going to be probably a $1,000 book, but there could be a $50 or $100 book among these, and I hope so anyway, so it'll be fun. Now, things like Book League, publishing Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre, that's probably going to be worth $5 because it was Book League. It means it went out to a whole bunch of subscribers, you know, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people getting that book, you know. So that's probably not going to be nearly as valuable. So we'll just have to see. Thomas Nelson was a big publisher in England, and they made these small format books where they go through very familiar titles by great authors, like The Talisman by Sir Walter Scott. You know, that was very appealing to me that person did that. I would like to suggest that if you have books that you wanted me to have a look at, why don't you write my Ed August's Books website, Ed August Books, and is there also a radio? Is there a radio listen page on that one? .com. Yeah, and if you go to my radio listen page, if you scroll down, there will be a place where you can leave a note or a message, and that'd be great. You know, leave me a message, questions that you have, and there's enough room there that you can put in a list of books. Well, not 100 books, but, you know, certainly 10 books, whatever you would like me to look through for you. I am actively buying and selling books, although it's hard to do that cross-country. I probably would not do that cross-country. As I say, I am in the Phoenix, the greater Phoenix area here in Maricopa County, in the Valley of the Sun. So let's see if I get off of this page. Let's see. Let me go back to what I was looking at before. Easier said than done, Ed. Okay. To get to my gallery, and then I have a bunch of things that basically I took screenshots of them. And the Ken Lopez is fascinating, where he's talking about the rare book business now and in 1999. In the 1999 edition of his talk about the current book market, he was saying, well, you know, it's no longer like 30 years ago when there was no value and no collecting really of authors like, you know, Ken Kesey and who did On the Road? Who did On the Road? Kerouac, Jack Kerouac. And others, you know, there were really big names now, but in 1999, but they sure weren't in 1969. They were big names, but it had not really hit the book market. So if you get a chance, look at that. It might be interesting, especially if you're a budding book collector. Then there's Ken Lopez, a bookseller of Massachusetts, and he's all over the air with his books. So let's see what else I have that might be of interest. I have a lot of anthropology. I have one book here, Maritime Adaptations of the Pacific. I am not even sure. It's by Castile. I don't know what the maritime adaptations really are, but it's in the World Anthropology Collection. It has titles like, it has articles like The Effects of Social Change on Maritime Technology in the Pacific Atoll Community, and Some Studies of the Influences of Prehistoric Human Predation on Marine Animal Population Dynamics. Here's another good one. Problems of the Origin of Ancient Sea Hunters' Cultures in the Northern Pacific. And finally, Cultural and Social Change in the Modes of the Ownership of Stone Title Weirs. Weirs, W-E-I-R-S. What the heck is a weir? No, it's not like a werewolf. It's stone. It's not stoneware. It's stone weir. So I think that weirs are some kind of channels or something like that, like a physical, some physical thing that people use either for cultivation or for watering something. Just not sure what that's about. Suzanne, is there any chance you can look up that word? W-E-I-R-S. W-E-I-R-S. So, yeah. So this book can be had for a mere $15. It's by Quimby and Castile are the editors. And, $15 book. Real, you know, unusual stuff if you like anthropology. There are only two, but you know what is strange? I see only two copies for sale in the world of this book. The publisher is Mouton de Gruyter, 1975, in Berlin. Wow. And it's in English? Yeah, it's in English. The Language of Anthropology. Yeah, so anyways, $14, $15. You found weir. What did you find?
W-E-I-R, a fence or wattle placed across a stream to catch or retain fish, a dam placed across a river or canal to raise or divert the water as for a mill race or to regulate or measure the flow.
So it's like ownership of it. I wonder if people fought over it, you know? That's my weir. Get out of here.
That's my fish in your weir.
Yeah. That's my fish you're wearing. No, that's not right. So here's a book. It's by Alfred Kinsey, K-I-N-S-E-Y. It's called The Sexual Behavior in the Human Male. It was published, this is like the eighth. You know, this is not the first edition. This is like the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth printing or eighth edition of it. Why did all these people want to see this book? What's the deal about this book by Saunders and Company? And, of course, this is the famous book where Kinsey talks about his studies of male sexual behavior. As a matter of fact, that's why the title is Sexual Behavior in the Human Male. For more, some people would sell it for less. But we're not going to linger on that book because it's not a really good book. Hey, here's one called The Oxford Illustrated History of Britain by Morgan. This is a beautiful book with a jacket with multicolored, you know, like plates throughout, illustrated throughout. It's everything having to do with Great Britain. And it's got, let me see, what is it, 646 pages? No, 640 pages plus an index. And 1984 with a chronology and genealogical charts. And beautifully illustrated, a comprehensive history of Britain and her people, done in true Oxford University Press tradition. Well, I got news for you. It's not that valuable a book. It's like a $10 book. So not necessarily, there's a lesson here. The lesson is that not necessarily just because a book is beautiful and well illustrated, is it going to be expensive. Now let me see who is selling these things. Okay, one person in Germany. How can they afford to sell the book dollars if they're in Germany? I guess that sure doesn't include shipping. That is the bugaboo of buying books in anywhere in Europe, is that the shipping is absolutely astronomical. I had somebody buy a set of astrology books for me by Alan Leo. This was like 1910 or something. There were eight of them, and they were in Australia. And we fought over the shipping. And he said, no, I don't want fancy shipping. Just put them in a bag. Oh, okay. So I discovered that you can put books in a bag, like a canvas, you know, bag at the post office. And they put the address on there, and they clip it to the thing, and they send it in the bag. But I was terribly, terribly upset to have to do that, because that almost guarantees that the books are going to be disbound by the time they get there. They're going to be ruined. And yet that's how he wanted them shipped. He did not want to spend even $20 for shipping, you know. So some people manage to shoot themselves in the foot by doing that. So here's a very unassuming book called Australian Stone Hatchets. That's what it's about. It's all about hatchets from the Aboriginals in Australia, by Academic Press. I notice Academic Press does a lot of anthropology books, 1982. And so the cheapest copy of this book is $86. So, you know, I have to go according pretty much to what other people are selling their books. I said other books, no, that's the only copy on the internet. That's the only copy on my database, is $86. So what a strange world, isn't it, that books would be so expensive? Here we're dipping into some more unusual stuff. It's called Erotic Tales of Medieval Germany by Klassen, C-L-A-S-S-E-N. And this came out in 2007. It is a paperback. How did I end up with this book in my collection? I don't know. But, you know, Erotic Tales of Medieval Germany. And here is a lesson. What's the matter? This is family friendly. I've not said anything that no family could possibly quibble about so far. Anyway, here's what I wanted to bring up about this. One company here, can't quite see, Ergodi Books, Ergod Books, E-R-G-O-D-E Books, Ergod Books, is selling it for $9.58. And the next guy is, okay, there's another one down here. There's another one down at the bottom. Bookman's in the United States, and Bookman's is a bookstore. I know we have it in Tucson, Arizona, in several locations. Maybe they have it elsewhere. They have the same book for $4.66. It's not damaged or anything. $4.66. But then if you go to, let's see, what's this publisher? Oh, now I don't understand that. I don't understand that at all. Ergodi Books has one for $9.58, and they have one that looks absolutely identical, $1.70. So you know what I think they probably did is they probably listed this book when they first got it for $32.70. It was on the market for a year or two, and then they were desperate to sell it, and then they priced it down to $9.50. So, as a matter of fact, it went from good to acceptable. And by the way, I quibble over that description of a book. This happened probably about 15 years ago, is that booksellers on the web, instead of using the traditional formula, which was fine, very good, good, fair, and poor, somebody came up with the idea, acceptable. Well, you know what? It might be acceptable to you, you jerk, the person who's selling it. I mean, he may look at it, oh, this is acceptable. It's an acceptable copy. It's acceptable to me. Well, you know what? It might be ex libris. It might be from the library. It might have markings on it. It could have been, grabbed by a Great Dane and chewed up or something. We don't know what the guy's definition of acceptable is. So it was a used good book, G-O-O-D, good. There are standards for the word good. If it's a good condition book, then the spine is not coming loose. Then you don't have, you know, massive, underscoring or anything. You know, as a matter of fact, there's nothing wrong with the book unless it's specified enlisting, and most of the time, the good dealers, the ones who really want to have a business, they will specify on there what the faults are of the book. It doesn't cost them any more to spend a couple lines to saying that, you know, small owner's signature on the front end paper, or, you know, slightly watered, you know, that's when the pages kind of ripple a little bit, like they've been tossed in a swimming pool. When I had a bookstore in Santa Clara, I had somebody with a van of books come over. They were real excited. They wanted to sell me some books. So I went outside, and they had probably like 5,000, well, okay, 1,000 books in there. And they had all been through a rainstorm. These freaking books were just rippled and rotting, you know. And, well, won't you give us something? It's got to be worth something. I said, well, maybe it's, you know, like raw material to be used as, you know, fertilizers. I didn't say anything like that. I didn't say it. But really, when a book is watered like that, so it just ripples, has no further value, you know. Unless it has some nice plates in it, some nice lithographs or something, you can sometimes clip those, trim those. Maybe if you trim them, then the edges, if the edges are what's watered, then you still have a good graphic that you could frame and maybe sell if it's old enough. So my brother used to do that. My brother had illustrations from books from the 1600s and 1700s, and sometimes he would get a Rembrandt, you know, and he would frame that and sell it. He really knew what he was doing with books. I am an amateur compared to what he can do. This is fun. Folks, I got to tell you, I was that you were waiting online. I had a disruption so far, two disruptions from a stalker kind of character, a troll. You'd call him a troll, wouldn't you, Suzanne? No. I don't want to. I don't want to because that's almost embarrassing. I'm going to suggest again that if you want to have some contact with the show, that probably getting on the air with me is not the best way. Right now, I just don't feel like I want to talk. I think that what you could do is we'll set up a contact form on my site so I can call them. Yeah, I can call you back with a contact form, and that'll also give me a working telephone number, because I think this this stalker has the ability to call in, you know, from Long Island and from New Jersey and from Miami and from San Francisco, or he can somehow do that, and it just rattles me. And I don't want to subject any of our listeners to any more swearing and talking dirty as he did when he called in about an hour ago. So please contact me at edaugustbooks.com and leave a message. And that would apply to any of you, even the stalker. Can do that. If you really want to talk, don't call me and get everybody screwed up here and listening to your crap. Just write me like a man, and you know,
meantime,
we'll see what we do.
In the meantime, we'll do a remote exorcism on him.
In the meantime, we'll do a remote exorcism of him. Yeah, that's what we'll do. That's what we can do. Now, here is a book. And why am I getting feedback suddenly? I wonder. I'm talking. Thank you. I don't know what you did, but I'm still getting some feedback. Thank you. Here's a book by Hugh Nibley, N-I-B-L-E-Y. Nibley. Sounds tasty, doesn't it? Nibley. Lehigh in the Desert. Lehigh, L-E-H-I. So it's like Lehigh in the Desert, and there's a subtitle to it, which is even more unusual. And this is a, this book was published in Salt Lake City, I believe. Let's see, what do I know about this book that's kind of interesting about it? What was it? Published by Bookcraft in Salt Lake City in 1952. And Dr. Nibley, the kind of ancient Near Eastern facts and observations that Book of Mormon are drawn from areas of language and literature, archaeology and history, culture and politics. Taken alone, few single factors are overwhelmingly impressive, but altogether they fit very convincingly into what Dr. Nibley calls the big picture. So anyway, so this is a book about the Latter-day Saints and the origins of that. And it's not a hugely valuable. It's like a $20 book. And this is not a library book. It's no remainder mark. It's pretty handsome as these books go. And it's just another book that I have not even put up on my site yet. But, you know, it will be soon. I will definitely have it available for you. So let me see. Who else do I have? I have lots of books. Oh, I wanted to talk about a book that came in as part of the Pedagogue's library. The Pedagogue, you can look up pedology or pedagogy. It has some. It's not what it sounds like. It has to do with being a learned academician, you know, academician. It's a teacher, a pedagogue, someone who teaches somebody, maybe with a ruler in their hand, you know, because they might be strict, a strict pedagogue. Anyway, this guy decided that he had a library and he was going to call it the Pedagogue's Library. And he has these little stickers, like about a half inch by 2 inches, that he has in the front of all his books. So he put them in there. All these books that he collected were dated between about 1857 and 1890s. And one of these books, one of the last ones that he put in his collection that I got from a little old lady in Tucson. And by the way, Tucson is a great city for old books because of the University of Arizona and the many, many students and faculty, probably thousands of faculty members over the years. Sometimes they retire and they retire and become professor emeritus or whatever. And finally they pass on. And these great collections that they built up kind of like circle around, you know, they just keep circulating around in town as people sell books. So you can find 10,000 wonderful books in Tucson that you would never find in Las Vegas. And I know because I've lived close to Las Vegas, and what happens is the people that move to Las Vegas, first of all, they're not professors or doctors, most cases. And also, they've left behind their collections. They left behind any collections of books they had when they moved to Las Vegas. And you see what I mean? So there are some places that are good, some places that are bad. So this particular place that was really rich with books, and I bought more books than I sold for the 2 years that I was on Grant Road in Tucson. This guy set himself up like he's got his library with his little sticker. And wonderful books. One of the books, for example, is called The Mountains of California. I'm not actually looking at it, although it's like about 10 feet away from me, but I just can't reach it from where I am. The Mountains of California. It was by John Muir. And you know who John Muir was, right? He was the naturalist. I don't know how trained he was in the subject. I don't know his degrees, diplomas, and whatnot. But he went on rambles in the Sierra Nevada mountains in California, from the Cascade Range, you know, down to, I don't know, Death Valley. I don't know how far south he went. So he spoke of the sequoia, the giant sequoia. He spoke of Lake Tahoe. He spoke of many of the areas that are just beautiful. And one of the areas that he was well known for exploring was everything around Yosemite. And the John Muir Trail, you've heard of the John Muir Trail. It goes down the spine of the Sierras for hundreds of miles, and hikers like to go on there. So it's called The Mountains of California. It's a beautiful book, and it came out in 1895. It's a first edition, and it's like a $500 book. And I feel very close to that book. That's because it's about 10 feet away right now. But I don't particularly even want to. Yes, I'll sell it. Okay, I'll sell it. You can twist. You can, you know, tie one hand behind my back or something. I promise to sell it to you, but I won't be happy at it. The book is in like between very good and fine condition. There's like nothing wrong with it, you know, at all. But it does have this one little book plate from the Pedagogue's library, and it might be possible to remove it if you wanted to. To me, that always adds to the fascination of these books when they have book plates. Have you ever seen any of these beautiful book plates that were put in collections of books by their owners going back to the 1940s and 30s and 20s and before that? There was a vogue for people to put very handsome artistic book plates in the front paste down, usually the front paste down, which would be the inside of the front cover of their books. I just love that. You know, there are book plate collectors, and I think the best is if they collect the book plate along with the book and keep the book. But no, some of them collect the book with the book plate, and then they excise the book plate and throw away the book. So not too happy with that. I've never done that. I would not do that. But anyway, the book plates are nice. Book plates are nice. And the other thing that makes a book, oh, I had a book with a book that was William Randolph Hearst, and it was from his library at some point. I don't know how it got out into the road, but he built San Simeon in California, and he was the person who Citizen Kane was made for. Orson Welles did that movie where he wanted to take Hearst down a couple of notches and ended up being blackballed in Hollywood for the rest of his life, practically. And, you know, that made him so depressed, and he got fatter and fatter. His voice, which had been so charming in the War of the Worlds, you know, kind of went downhill from there. And it ruined him. So that's what he got for going after a plutocrat like William Randolph Hearst. But anyway, it was a romance novel of some kind from the late 20s, early 30s, but it had this wonderful book plate in it. And I thought, wow, is that cool or what? So book plates can be very interesting if you collect them. There was also one from somebody, was it Sloan Kettering or something? Some person who was a very famous doctor, and it showed him on the book plate tending to and treating some children. There was a little boy who had his head covered with a bandage, the upper part, and a little girl who was sick or something, and he was in the center of the book plate. I thought that was charming, you know. So sometimes the book plate can go with one's path in life. But I think that's pretty cool, having a book plate. What really makes a book valuable is if you have it signed by the author. I think I was saying last week that I've been cursed when it comes to signed books, absolutely cursed, because what happened was I got I keep getting books that were signed by not the best people in the whole world. Not really evil people, but just people that it's a little bit questionable about their personality or, you know, whatever. What did I have? Well, Mitt Romney. Well, Mitt Romney's not a bad guy. Come on. Mitt Romney, what did he ever do that was bad? You know, he ran for president. He didn't do a very good job. He didn't become president. But anyway, I have a book signed by Mitt Romney. And then I have a book about For My Fathers, I think it's called. Yeah, and that's by John McCain. And John McCain, of course, we know John McCain. He ran for president, too. What is this? I get books by people that ran for president? I think it would have been better off if I get books that were signed by people that that actually won the presidency. And then, let's see, going back a few years, I have one by Herbert Hoover that I got a fantastic house sale where somebody was selling books. They wanted to get rid of the books, and they sold books that were altogether probably worth twice as much as the house that they were selling. You know, it's like, we want to get rid of this junk. And, $5 a box or $5 a carload or whatever, you know, we just want to get rid of the junk. And, that person made a lot of book people very happy. But, you know, when the first book that you find on the shelf is in the dust jacket, pristine condition, signed by a former president, you know, whether it's Hoover or anybody, you know, that's a fait accompli. It's pretty cool, too. And anyway, so who else did I have? I had books by Kurusu, K-U-R. No, they weren't by him, but they were owned by him and his wife. K-U-R-U-S, Kurusu, R-U-S-U. And he was the ambassador from Japan, the start of the Second World War. And he was one of those two Japanese ambassadors who, you know, you remember them with their top hats and everything, fancy look, you know, that met with the Secretary of State, what was his name, Hull, I think, like the day before Pearl Harbor, or maybe it was actually the morning of Pearl Harbor, you know. So, and there's a photograph that I found online, which shows Caruso speaking at a podium in Berlin in front of the whole German staff. I mean, there was Hitler was there, and Goering, you know, and all those guys at the microphone. So I came up with a caption. I said, Caruso talks, Hitler listens, you know. But what can I do? I had, you know, this nice collection. I did sell the collection, but but it's annoying when you have a collection that's controversial, that is, you know, owned by the Axis powers, you know, by a person who shook the hands of Adolf Hitler probably on a number of times. You know, it's just freaky. It's just really freaky. But anyway, but I guess the story that I wanted to tell. And let's keep track of the time here. I'm just wondering if we're not time here. It's 1:28. I got 2 minutes. Holy Toledo, Batman. So anyway, what I wanted to say is, if the book is signed, it's a keeper. If I'm in a thrift store and they have a bunch of books that are 50 cents or a dollar, whatever, I keep that book. I would keep any signed books that turn up. I sometimes look for first editions, but first editions are not such a big deal as they were 20 or 30 years ago. People don't ordinarily have huge collections of first editions, you know, but definitely signed books. And in the future, we'll be going through more lists of books, and I will be exploring book lists that you send me via my website, edaugustsbooks.com, and that would be really cool. That'll be ready in a day or two. Oh, you mean it's not ready now? But don't they have a comment thing in there somewhere? No, not really.
Well, they can contact you directly, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm so sorry. I know there are people holding. There are a number of people holding. This show is more popular than I ever expected doing this kind of thing. I think every week I'm going to take a box of books and look through it and share some of the findings with you, as well as look at the books that you tell me about. And if you are in Arizona, I'm in the market for used and rare books. So what's all that going on? I just had some freaky little noises on my desktop. So I thank you very much. And turning the show over now for the second half to Suzanne with Hang Up But Don't End. I'm having a hard time finding the right words. For Mad Scientist Exposed, which is a totally, totally different animal. But I hope you enjoy it. Okay, thanks now. See you again on next Tuesday. Right? Same time. They're probably going to be gone, don't you think so? Oh, I have to hang up.